Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly, an assistant digital editor of The Spectator, standing in for Laura Prendergast. I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. Theresa May has been in Brussels today to meet Juncker and EU leaders. Has she made any success on the backstop?
Well, I think she has got somewhere, not that far, but she has got somewhere in that it has been agreed that her and Juncker will meet again before the end of the month and that the UK and EU negotiators are going to start talking again. Now, the EU is still adamantly saying that there's no prospect at all of reopening the withdrawal agreement, that that's not going to happen. But the fact that negotiators are speaking again does suggest that there is some possibility of some movement somewhere. What I think we've seen over the last few days is when Donald Tusk made his hell comments yesterday, they basically were an obvious distraction technique because you basically create this massive row about something. It A, lowers expectations for May's visit, and it also means that people don't really notice the fact that these talks have started up again. They just hear the rhetoric. So I think that Theresa May will be relieved that she's coming back from Brussels with something. She's not actually arrived and had the door slammed in her face. She's actually been told the negotiators can start talking again, come back at the end of the month. I personally think we're still in a position where we're not going to see any movement until the EU sees what happens when the Cooper Amendment returns to the Commons on Valentine's Day. If that is defeated again, then I think that the pressure within the EU to come to some kind of accommodation will increase a bit. However, if Cooper passes, then I think the EU will take the view that it can just sit tight and the Commons will work its way towards a softer Brexit of the sort that the EU would have been happier with all along.
James is quite right to say that this is part of the great Brussels choreography. But then again, let's look at what's just happened here. Theresa May's been told, thank you, but why don't you come back at the end of next week? Now, why fly all the way to Brussels to be told, please come back later? The negotiators are going to start talking. Of course, they were talking all the time. I mean, and then both parties act like there's time to waste here. There isn't. Well, Brexit Day is 29th of March. There's all sorts of people who are very concerned, companies, importers, wanting progress on this. Now, she is asking them for just one sentence. She is saying, I can get this deal, which I agreed, which you agreed, all of us wanted to happen. It can pass Parliament if we simply agree a break clause. That's all there is to it. You don't need a negotiation to agree that. You don't need teams of people. You just need the EU to say, yes, you can have a break clause. If she did that, she'd get back to Parliament tomorrow. Parliament would back it tomorrow. Panic would be over and everybody can stop the no-deal planning. But instead, what do we get? Yet another part of this sort of Swan Lake death scene that goes on forever and ever and ever. And they're waiting for yet another vote to see their options. And just think of a disruption caused on both sides of the channel. I just think, you know, sure, on one level you can say this is the parliamentary dance, this is how it ought to be performed, but on a non-political level you get completely exasperated at the EU's intransigence and how, with one sentence, they could bring this drama to a close, and yet again they've said, no, let's just keep this show rolling for another week, perhaps more.
We saw Tusk's exasperation yesterday. Do you think that then that May has just as much reason to be exasperated as he does?
Yes, I do, but nobody should use that kind of language. Of course, I'm not portraying Theresa May as a great saint who's done everything right. She has made so many Brexit mistakes and heaped a great amount of embarrassment on this country by misstep after misstep. The same with the senior Tory Brexiteers. This whole thing has been a car crash of mistakes. But now that we're finally at this stage where she's got a deal which Parliament could agree, then why can't the EU do this extra sentence to add to the 3,000 other sentences of this deal? Now, this is, I guess, my own little cry of exasperation, Tusk style. I know, and James will be able to put far better than I can, about the reasons why you ought not to do this. I guess, James, the rationale is, if you were Juncker right now, of course you would wait for the stew, you would wait to see what the Cooper Amendment did, you would wait to see if she might get into an even better position, because you would wait, I presume they're waiting, to see if she might be forced into a customs union, because today we've had the Labour Party laying out its demands. And I tell you what's striking about those demands, there's no hint of a second referendum. So if you're a Remainer, you've just lost any parliamentary parliamentary representation you thought you might have. Instead, they're wanting a customs union. So I guess, James, the EU's choice will be, do we agree to her deal, in other words, give her the escape clause, or do we say, we're going to roll the dice and bet that you're going to be forced to do a customs union?
So I mean, the timing of a Corbyn letter, you know, has massively undercut May in Brussels, because she wants to be able to turn up and say, look, only way I can get this deal through my parliament is with a change, a legally binding change to the backstop. So that's why you've got to talk about it with me. Corbyn opens up a different route, which is the same route as the EU would like the UK to go down. Change the political declaration to talk about a customs union, a closer UK relationship with the single market. And then the EU can add in some words about how, because of that, the backstop isn't going to be needed. And I think that, you can see, is the logic that they are trying to pursue here. And this is the question, which is, which way is it going to break? I think May has been weakened in Brussels by this letter, but she's been given something that helps her at home, in that I think it is now easier for her to turn to her own MPs who are holding out against her deal and say, look, Jeremy Corbyn is against both a second referendum and no deal. So really the choice now is between my deal and his deal. And I think you can't underestimate how devastated campaigners for a second referendum are by the Corbyn letter. I was talking to one of the few, and one of them is now saying they might vote for her deal because it is now clear that they're not going to get what they want, which is a second referendum, because there is no way a second referendum has a hope if the Labour leadership won't back it. And I think this letter today, even though Keir Starmer is saying, oh, Jeremy Corbyn's going to write to members to tell them this doesn't preclude a second referendum, this is a clear move away from that strategy.
I think the second referendum was actually pretty dead before. I mean, I met Gina Miller a couple of weeks ago, and she was saying even she's given up on it because it's just too late. And if you look at the opinion polls, it was never really going anywhere. And before he started his bizarre rant about Brexiteers and hell, Donald Tusk was quite right to point out that the Remain campaign simply doesn't exist in Parliament. It doesn't really have it. Like, overturning the referendum is going away as an option now, to the dismay of a lot of people who thought it might be one of the crazy things that might come from this denouement. Now we're seeing only a couple of real prospects, a customs union, whereby Theresa May would have to basically get into bed with lots of Labour MPs. And James, do you think that would split the Tory party if that were to happen? Because this is why she wouldn't do it. She might think, well, I could do this, but it would split my party, corn law style, and guarantee Corbyn getting in.
I think she will be very... I mean, Theresa May joined the Tory party as a teenager. She met her husband at a young Conservatives disco. You know, she will not want to become the Tory answer to Ramsay MacDonald or the 21st century version of Robert Peel, who personally splits the party in two. But I also think she really doesn't want to do no deal. I think that's it. And I think, if she was forced between the choice of going down the customs union path or no deal, I think she would, with no enthusiasm, go down the customs union path. But I think she will hope that she can persuade her own MPs that this is the choice. So basically, do you take her deal for all its flaws, or do you accept that you're going to end up with a Corbyn-style deal with a customs union and all the greater alignment with the EU, which is not what Tory Brexiteer ultras realise.
Is that a realistic threat there? If you're Jacob Rees-Mogg, do you think that she stands a realistic chance of... Not that it would get through. We know if she were to do an alliance, there probably is a majority in Parliament for it. But do you really... If you're a Tory Brexiteer, James, do you think that Theresa May would take the gamble on splitting her party in that way?
I think she would take that gamble if the choice was between that and no deal. Because I think that she's an instinctively cautious politician, and I just don't think she is prepared to go there when it comes to no deal. I also think that ultimately the House of Commons would not allow her to pursue no deal as a policy. I think the only circumstance in which I can see no deal happening is if you got a kind of Salzburg no deal, if you see what I mean. If the EU completely humiliated her on something and there was a kind of wave of, oh my word, they're totally unreasonable, and you kind of, and it happened in those circumstances. But I think otherwise, I don't think that's going to happen. And I think that she will try and say to her MPs, look, this is the choice. And I think the question is whether they begin to accept that or not. And I think some of them do.
So do you think Jeremy Corbyn's five demands are a clever ploy, or have they given Theresa May a lot more breathing room?
Well, they're more realistic than the previous six tests, because they junk this exact same benefits of a single market, which was obviously never going to happen. But at the moment, they are also, at the moment, obviously an offer that Theresa May could not accept at this point. It is obviously designed to be an offer that Theresa May will would only accept at, you know, 1 minute to midnight on March the 29th if it was the choice between that and no deal. But I think you can see what Labour's strategy now is. Essentially, they don't want to be associated with either no deal or no Brexit, but their price for allowing Brexit to go through will be an attempt to try and accentuate Tory divisions to the maximum amount possible. That basically to get to a position where the Tory party is so split that a Labour victory at the next election becomes more likely. I think the intriguing question is, does this gambit end up splitting the Labour Party? Very interestingly, Owen Smith, who challenged Jeremy Corbyn for Labour leadership unsuccessfully straight after the referendum, essentially on the premise that Corbyn hadn't been pro-EU enough in that campaign, was asked today whether he could stay in the Labour Party by the BBC, and he just said that's a very good question, which is, I think, a very interesting answer. So I think the prospect of splits in both main parties has never been closer in our lifetimes.
So do you think Donald Tusk, by offering a customs union, is sort of getting the two benefits in that he might not only get a softer Brexit, but also split the two main parties and show and punish Britain for leaving the EU?
Well, I think we have to give Tusk the benefit of the doubt here. I think that the Tusk inferno is a logical creation. It wasn't just a spasm of rage. He wants to demonstrate to the rest of Europe, including the 40% of French, who, according to a recent poll, want to leave the EU as well, that if you do go out of the club, the alternative is wilderness, roasting in a fire of hell somewhere. And if it splits your political system, it's a warning to a political party that, sure, if you want to embrace this cause, it's a poison pill that will disintegrate you, whether you're Tory or whether you're Labour. So I do think that, go back to my starting point, where I do see the narrow political rationale for Tusk and Juncker and Barnier to send Theresa May home today with nothing, because they think that there could be more political mischief to squeeze out of a situation. I, rather naively, as a Europhile, wish that they put the poor people living on either side of these borders first.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. That's all for now. Join us again in our next episode of Coffee House Shots. Don't forget, if you get 12 weeks of The Spectator for £12, you get a free Aspinall cardholder worth £60. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/Aspinall.